Welcome to the Dense City Podcast, a show where we meet with academics to discuss their research on cities. I'm your co-host, Becca Mayers. On today's episode, we welcome Dr. Ignacio Tiznado-Atkin. Ignacio is a postdoctoral fellow in the Department of Human Geography at the University of Toronto. He explores transport and land use dynamics in urban and suburban areas, including the geospatial analytics of transport systems, transport equity, and sustainable transport policies. This paper was premised on the idea of time poverty, which is a term that's been around for a while, used to define the lack of time we feel we have for the tasks in our lives. Juggling all the tasks can leave us feeling stressed for time because we just don't have enough of it. But this paper connects this concept of time poverty to transportation to ask how pressed for time certain groups feel, especially when they spend a lot of time traveling to their destinations, and what policies can help alleviate this stress. So, without further delay, Ignacio, welcome to Dense City. We're so happy to have you here. How are you today?
Hi, how are you? Thank you so much for the invitation. I'm pretty good, thanks. How are you?
Not too shabby. I'm excited to start talking about this research with you. But first, tell me about what motivated you to even do this work in the first place.
I started thinking about this idea of time poverty in my last year of the PhD. I was doing my thesis about accessibility, access to opportunities and affordability issues in Santiago, in Chile. And I was particularly interested in exploring this time poverty dimension. I will explain later what do we mean by transportation poverty, but basically there's like a bunch of different dimensions to analyze. And I noted that in the literature, like particularly in the transportation research, time poverty was not like the main dimension approach in previous work. And I had the pleasure then to work with like some colleagues at U of T, refining the idea, refining also the data set and the methods. Basically all started like some years ago, but now I had a chance to work more on that.
Great. So I'm glad it came to fruition. And considering this concept of time poverty, walk us through the purpose of this article then.
Yeah, so basically to analyze time poverty, we took two different conceptual frameworks in the literature, like two theoretical models in the literature. So first, we use like a classical time use framework to analyze and to basically disaggregate the number of hours that we have in a normal week. So we were able to analyze like free time and also analyzing different like categories of time, like contracted time, the time that you spend when you go to work or go to study, unpaid work, all the duties that you do usually at home, cleaning or care stuff, necessary time as well, like basic physiological activities. So we disaggregate all those categories to find how people spend free time. And we disaggregate this unpaid and paid time, differentiating the time spent performing the activity, but also the time needed to reach a different activity.
I see.
Which is basically depending on the transportation and land use dynamics.
Okay, so you've been able to split the kind of work, unpaid work time, and then the time we seemingly have off, or the limited time that we have off afterwards. Based also on land use dynamics. And what do you mean by land use dynamics?
Well, basically it's how the transportation system and the land use system interact to access these daily opportunities when we are traveling to work or to study or to help for health reasons. Basically we use a certain transportation mode and it will depend on how the activities are distributed, how is the land uses in different places of the city. So basically that dynamic between transportation and where the activities are located will determine how many time we'll spend in a normal day traveling.
I see. So if my school is a 10-minute walk away, then I would probably walk there versus a 30-minute drive that would probably dictate my transportation habit to drive.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Great. So then walk us through some of that literature you had already mentioned that informed your work.
One thing that is important to highlight in this conceptual framework is that we analyze this time use framework at the same time we analyze another, or we use another conceptual framework around transport disadvantage and social disadvantage. So it's basically how time poverty can contribute to this social exclusion. That is when you are not participating in all the activities that you want to participate or you need to participate because you have certain transportation problems, or you don't have, for example, enough resources to move by certain transportation alternatives. So basically that lead us to explore different kind of literature. Like our first approach was trying just to explore the concept of poverty. And we know that poverty is basically measured in the field of economics and is mostly related to income or consumption. But then there has been a lot of contributions in the literature from different fields. Identifying poverty in different dimensions. So basically, poverty no longer depends only on one threshold or one standard, but a threshold or a standard in different dimensions. And we were particularly interested in the transportation dimension. And that's how we connected with the theory of transport poverty. And basically, in the transportation field, we have basically this concept that was introduced in the literature in 2016. And we can define transportation poverty as people who experience mobility poverty, accessibility poverty, exposure to externalities, transport affordability, and problems with time poverty. So basically the first two dimensions that I mentioned, like the mobility and accessibility, is when you don't have enough available transportation options, or the available transportation options are not useful enough to reach your daily activities, considering your individual characteristics or needs. Mm. And you also can experience transport poverty if you have problems with the cost of transportation, if you are exposed to negative externalities, for example, unsafe or unhealthy travel environments. And finally, this dimension of time poverty, that is when an individual spends an excessive amount of time traveling, and that could lead to social isolation or not enough activity participation.
Mm-hmm. Like my drives to work on the 401 back when I was a co-op student, it took over an hour each day, each way.
Yeah. And that could determine basically if you are able to enroll in other activities in that day, and if you can spend more time sleeping or resting or watching TV.
Right.
So it's something that can contribute to that available time for doing other stuff.
So then the last concept under this theory of transport poverty is time poverty, as this overlooked dimension of transportation research and time use. So walk us through some of this conceptual framework.
Yeah, well, basically as explained, this transportation poverty concept has these different dimensions. And in the literature, there has been increasing interest in exploring these different dimensions. But probably the least approach one was transport-related time poverty. And that specific dimension could be related to a bunch of different things, where your house is located, if you need to travel with someone else. For example, you have any kind of dynamic inside your household, the available transportation options. If you have driver's license or you have a car available or you need to use only public transport, or you move just like in your neighborhood by active transport. Where are the activities that you need to perform every day? And if you are able also to replace maybe travel with remote access. We know that now after the pandemic, it was like something very important that now there's a lot of people with the possibility to work from home, and that can save some time from commuting that for some people could be very, very high. In fact, like in Canada, there's evidence of extreme commuters that are basically people that spend more than 60 or 90 minutes one way to arrive to their workplace. And that's more prevalent among equity deserving groups, like low income people, recent immigrants, or non-white Canadians. So it's very important to have that in mind when analyzing time poverty among different social demographic groups.
So then walk us through that conceptual framework that you had created from the two conceptual frameworks.
Yeah, so basically we divided, as I explained before, the day, the hours available in a day in different categories. So we have like free time, we have paid time or paid work, unpaid work, and we have necessary activities. For all those activities, we have the time you spend doing the activity and the time you need to reach that activity that is related to the transportation and land use dynamic. And on the other hand, we have this framework about social exclusion. So basically, social exclusion is when you are experiencing transportation problems. Let's say you don't have a very good level of service, you don't have like a high frequency for public transport, or you don't have available a car, or the cost of transportation is too high for you. And then that is like combined with the social dimension, when you are socially disadvantaged and you have like low income, or you don't have, for example, paid work, or you, for example, have different needs or capabilities depending on your age. So basically how those two things combine, the transportation dimension and the social dimension, could lead to less participation in activities. And we try to combine those two, basically the time use, and on the other hand, the transport related time poverty or social exclusion.
So then walk us through how you did that, your methodology.
Well, basically, We designed the analysis based on the time use module of the Canadian General Social Survey. It's a very, very long survey. We have a lot of information there. But basically, our interest was to cluster people, to identify different groups of people, considering individual characteristics, but also time poverty standards, or the time that people spend in different activities, and also time stress questions. Like one question included in this data set that is pretty interesting is, how often do you feel rushed, like in a normal day? So that can give you some hints about how pressured you are to perform all the activities you want to do in a certain day or in a certain week. So we try to incorporate all those characteristics and try to cluster, identify different groups of people experiencing time poverty and transport-related time poverty.
How does one assess time poverty? So you said kind of time stress measures, like how do you feel at the end of the day? Do you always feel stressed for time? What other things are used to assess time poverty?
Well, when I mentioned this literature about poverty more generally, we can think about poverty in terms of income. And usually when we are assessing poverty in terms of income, we have in mind some sort of a standard or threshold. We set a certain bar saying, well, all people that is below this line is like living in poverty. And to do this analysis for the transportation side is basically the same. We need like a one threshold for time poverty and another one of how much time is like enough to travel daily.
Interesting. So it's like the poverty line for time.
Exactly. Yeah. So basically, you can see that agencies and governments usually use this kind of thresholds for the poverty in terms of income. And for the time poverty and the transportation related time poverty, the first things we did was just looking at the literature, just to know what people used in previous work. And basically we identified that to set this time poverty threshold, people usually consider the time you spend on paid work and unpaid work. So usually people considering someone living in time poverty, if they spend between 1.5 and 2 times the normal full-time hours in a certain context. For example, in Canada, it will be 37.5 hours per like 1.5 or 2. If you spend more time than that in paid and unpaid activities, basically you can be considered as time poor.
Wow. So everyone listening out there, if you spend a full work week, 1.5% of your time on work and unpaid work, you are considered to be having time poverty.
Yeah. And sometimes it's like something that you are not really aware of it. We have presented this work in for different audiences. And usually when you say that, you can see people's faces saying, oh, maybe I can be considered as time poor, you know? So to define exactly the point, because it could be between this range, between 1.5 and 2, we look at our data. And as I mentioned before, we had this question about time pressure, how pressure you feel like in a normal day or how rushed. And we identify that setting the standard at 76 hours per week in combined paid work and unpaid work, you could be considered time poor, at least for the Canadian context, because that was pretty related with a high percentage of people saying, I'm feeling like almost every day rushed or very often rushed to do all my daily activities.
And also, was it a requirement to have paid work and unpaid work, or were there subsets of the population that did entirely unpaid work, worked this many hours per week and felt like they didn't have enough time?
Well, yeah, that's a great question. Like basically we can have some specific individuals just spending time in paid work or just spending time in unpaid work. Usually the definition is considering both. But you can reach that standard or threshold just with one of those two categories. So that's a pretty important thing. And yeah, basically that's like something that we had some kind of clue from the literature, and then we adapted it for the Canadian context. And for the transportation context, basically there's no any previous work defining like a poverty line for transportation. But there was like an interesting literature about travel time budget. That is basically how much time usually people spend traveling in a normal day. And it was really, really surprising for me and for my other colleagues as well to find that there's some kind of range between 1 and 1.5, 1.3 hours that across all nations and contexts is almost like the average of time that you spend traveling for your daily activities.
Wow. Wow. That is surprising. So tell us about the findings then from this work. I'm so eager to hear what you found.
Yeah. So basically we did the analysis first for the full sample without doing like any differentiation by different groups.
I see.
And we found that like almost 20% of Canadians over 24 can be classified as time poor, and 8% can be classified as time poor and also transport related time poor. So there's like an important number. Of course, it's not like the majority of people, but around 10% of people is experiencing both. And in the main trends we found is that gender and household compositions are very important factors for time poverty. So 24% of women in the sample are time poor versus 20% of men. And when we analyze that, considering income and gender, we can see that women experience more time poverty across all income levels. Mm-hmm.
I would say that that's pretty much unsurprising on literature, but absolutely, you know, always good to have some statistical information to back that up.
Yeah, I would say that I was more surprised about the gap between people who doesn't have kids at home versus those that have kids.
Yeah, tell us more about that.
Yeah, like dual or single households with no kids is around 7 to 8% that of people that are experiencing time poverty versus almost 70%, between 65% and 70% of dual or single parents.
Regardless of the single parenthood or dual parent household.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Wow.
So that's, yeah, that's like, of course, we were expecting the result, but maybe not at like such a big gap.
Even the gap between genders isn't that big, but the gap between the kids and no kids is just astronomical of a gap.
Yeah. Yeah. Another thing that was like interesting to find it was like that younger people are more likely to be time poor compared to older people. But basically, one thing that is interesting to see is the gender gap is present in the younger people, but then when you look at like older people, like for example over 65, that gap doesn't exist anymore.
Do you think it's because kids move out of the household?
Exactly. Yeah. So basically, for younger people, the gender gap is the highest in our sample, at least. We knew like beforehand that income, gender, age, household structure were like very important factors. We don't have like the results for every combination, because basically we wanted to like focus our analysis more than this, like in this very high level picture, try to identify these groups through the cluster analysis. So basically all the things that I said was just for the whole sample, but for the groups, we identified 10 different groups. I'm not going to describe all of them, but I think that I can give like some hints about interesting results. So we found two groups from the 10 that experienced time poverty like around almost over 70%. But those two groups are very different in terms of social demographic characteristics. So the cluster one is mainly composed by medium and low income women between 35 and 54 who are single parents. Okay. And the cluster two, that is basically almost the same percentage of time poverty, is composed primarily by high income groups that are like dual parents between 35 and 54. So basically we have like two different, very, very different social demographic groups experiencing this time poverty. The two clusters also share like, you can see like a very similar average like of paid, unpaid, and free time activities. They usually perform more non-paid activities and they have less time available for leisure, for example, 21% fewer activities compared to the full sample. But the interesting thing is when you analyze the first cluster for women that are single parents in medium or low income, basically there's like a 26% of people experiencing the intersection between time poverty and transport related poverty. And that's pretty important to highlight because they are like they are at risk of experiencing social exclusion. Basically, they could not be participating in normal activities or desired activities because they don't have the time and the resources to participate.
So that main difference was that this cluster one, which was single women with kids, they don't have as much free time, and the other cluster, despite having, you know, the same pressure of time poverty, they spend more time in leisure, and there's more of like a fungible amount of leisure time before they reach this level of social exclusion in their day.
Well, and also another thing is, basically, if you are time poor, but you have the resources, you are a high income household, you have the ability to remedy that time poverty, like acquiring, for example, substitutes in the market. For example, you can have someone helping at home or helping with childcare tasks every day. But if you are in a low income and basically you are experiencing that time poverty and transport related time poverty, maybe you don't have anyone that could help you to gain more time, basically. You can, of course, rely on social networks or your family, but it's a situation that will be divided or spread in your own family or your own social networks. So basically, yeah, that was interesting to find like two groups that if you just look at the time poverty percentage, they are very similar, but then their own characteristics are a little bit different. So basically, after these two clusters that I mentioned before, these groups are the highest percentage of time and transport-related time poverty combined. And of course, they experience this transport-related time poverty for different reasons as well. We were able to identify people spending too much time to participate in social activities. Other people are spending too much time for care activities, and other for commuting, basically. So one of them, the one about like commuting, we basically classify them as transport-related time poor men, primarily, who are high income but are more likely to be extreme commuters. So people spending more than 60 or 90 minutes in their daily commute. And 81% of those of the people in that group experience time pressure as well, and it's the biggest like gap in the whole sample. Even when they don't experience a lot of time poverty, they are always pressured to perform all the activities they want to do in a normal day.
So that's where that perception comes in. Even though they might have a lot of time, they still feel very stressed for time.
Yeah, exactly. Or they basically just like running all the time to do the activities. Maybe they can perform all of them, but the perception is that you are running all day. Yeah.
Well, when you spend over 2 hours on your commute, where's the rest of your day? You have to eat, sleep, right? Yeah.
The second cluster is like basically transport-related time for women that spend too much time for care purposes. So they spend like over 60 minutes or even almost like 2 hours for those specific purposes. Even when the full sample, you can see that it's concentrated below 30 minutes. So the difference is huge. It could be like two times or three times more. And the last one, it was a bit surprising because it's people spending too much time in social or leisure reasons. So we are still not sure about the reason. Basically, it could be like people, for example, going outside the city to have like vacation time, for example. But also could mean like people that doesn't have like leisure opportunities close by. Basically, you want to go to a park or to visit a friend. And basically all your friends or all the big parks or fun parks are far away from your home. So you're spending a lot of time to get there and, for example, spend a full day enjoying a park or something like that. So we need to like go deep in that specific group, but I think we will have like some differences of the individuals that compose that specific group.
What are some opportunities for future research?
We are still like, identifying different limitations of our analysis and possible ways to improve our results in the future. And maybe also like providing some some hints on people interested in doing more research on that. So first of all, like, this data set is huge. The sample size is like, I think 14,000 people participating in this survey. So it's pretty good because we are able to identify these 10 groups, and every group is like composed at least for around 1,000 people. So it's pretty important. We have like also the expansion factor. So we can basically say how many people in Canada is behaving like these different groups. But one thing that is like a limitation, because we are doing basically transportation research, is we don't have the location of the respondents. The public version of the data set doesn't include the location of the respondents. And we have the information about like travel times and all that, but it's self-reported. And we don't know where that travel is happening. So we don't have any information about built environment or transportation options, or how good is like walkability or access through public transport, for example. So we are now trying to work with the research data center in Canada to get this information from the full sample from those 14,000 people. Probably we will get like around half that have that information about like location. So we can include in the analysis basically all these population density or built environment factors or walkability scores or access through public transport to different amenities that could serve also to identify how these groups are experiencing or where are they located. Maybe there's also like spatial patterns of these groups. We don't know that yet. If we are implementing a policy, probably will be like at a local level to improve accessibility or the travel times of certain population groups. So identify like the key spaces where we can do like some or implement some new policies would be great for future analysis. Another thing is like this analysis was based on individuals. So we are not analyzing the household dynamics. And it would be great to have that like in future research. Basically how the dynamics between different members of the household can be reflected in this time poverty. Of course, if someone is not spending a lot of time in unpaid work, probably someone at home is doing all that stuff. So we can analyze in future research like the differences between household members, and that would be great as well.
Yeah, it would also be interesting to see how kids experience their parents' time poverty, mm-hmm. because if they're in the back seat of a car or on the bus, kind of what activities do they get to do while they're participating in those transit related behaviors. Absolutely. Right. So yeah. Or on the back of a bike waving to their community members is what we all kind of romanticize. So then what opportunities are there for transit related policies? We spoke a little bit about this, but how can we help to alleviate this time poverty that people are experiencing across Canada?
Yeah. So when we think about like transport related time poverty, we know that there's like a bunch of different factors contributing to that time that you're spending daily in transportation. One thing is where your house is located. If you need to do activities just for yourself or for someone else at your household, the available transportation options, if you have available a car or a bike, or you are just moving by public transport, for example, where your activities are located, if your workplace is like, I don't know, 20 minutes walk from your home, or is like an hour commute by car, for example, if you are able to replace some of that movement with virtual access, basically remote access to education or to work or even health, and it was very common during the pandemic. So I would say that probably the first policy that comes to mind is the 15-minute city. I know that probably like most of the people listening to this is like familiar with the concept, but basically it's when you aim to provide access to certain communities to daily services in 15-minute walking or cycling. And some cities also consider transit, like if you can access some key daily activities or daily opportunities by transit. So, of course, if you are providing like proximity to daily activities, you can have a strong impact on time use. As I mentioned before, in this like these three different groups that experience a very high percentage of transportation time, transportation-related time poverty, they spend like 2.5 hours, 2.5 hours just traveling. So if you are able to provide at least some of those activities in the neighborhood, for example, accessing to like groceries or health, or even like your school is very close by, you're able to save a lot of time that you can spend in other activities, leisure, rest, or social networks. I think that one thing that is important to highlight is that when you're analyzing time poverty like broader, probably the main driver of time poverty is like the amount of time you spend working and doing unpaid work. Transportation is a small maybe portion of your day. But of course, we are particularly interested in how transportation and land use dynamics can contribute to save some time and basically improve quality of life as well.
Yeah, it's like the fraction of time they spend on transit-related activities, if we can affect that even slightly, we've made a 1 to 2 hour impact on people's alleviation of time poverty and get them to doing things that make their lives better.
Yeah, and basically every transportation or land use policy is complex as well. But as you said, could be maybe a little bit easier than basically choosing the amount of hours that you want to work in your workplace or the amount of activities for care reasons that you need to perform on a daily basis. So we are aware of those limitations and basically how transportation is like a small portion, but there's like an opportunity there to provide better access and to save some time for different individuals to spend in other activities.
Is there anything that you wanted to mention that we didn't get to or you wanted to leave our listeners off with?
No, just to say that for me, this like past years since the idea started like in this last year of my PhD, and now that are basically like the research is almost finished, at least this first part, it's been a very fun ride. I think that if people is listening and is like interested in doing some research about this, I really recommend it because it's like fun. You have a lot of different questions, perspectives to approach this, even like in a multidisciplinary team. I know that people from like economics or engineering will be having like a very different perspective, maybe from social sciences, geography, or sociology. So this is like you can see contributions in the time use research from a very wide set of researchers. And I think that's like very, very exciting. And particularly for transportation, there's like a good opportunity to make some new contributions. So just to motivate people, if they want to be involved in this research, just go ahead. There's like a very, very nice data sets waiting for you.
Well, thank you so much, Ignacio, for coming on the podcast. And I hope you have a great rest of your day.
Thank you so much for the invitation. Yeah, it was a really nice time. So say hey, bye to everyone and thanks for listening.
That's it for now. And thank you so much for listening. A big thanks to Ignacio for joining us on this episode. Stay posted on the soon-to-be publication of this work by following Ignacio on Twitter at @NACHO_TIZNADO or check out his website, tisnazioatkin.cl. You can see it posted in the show notes. Please give us an awesome review and let us know what you think of the show and share it with anyone who you think would like to listen. To keep the conversation going and for updates on new episodes, follow us at Dense City Pod on Twitter and Instagram, and subscribe to the podcast wherever you're listening right now. A special thanks to Emily Huang of Emily H. Illustrations for creating the artwork for this podcast. You can see more of her work by following the link in the show notes. And another thank you to Reed Kai and Ryan Kinnear for the show music. See you next time on Dense City.